Gentlemen, to another fabulous edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, but broadcasting live from the future, live from New Zealand, from the fabulous foundation of Fluoride Heads, Auckland, New Zealand. And fortunately enough, though, we get to be joined on this show by many people of the international community from all over the world, and this is what I find about truthers and patriots and people who actually give a flying F about humanity to any degree and want to do something important with their lives, all have in common a real lust to get whatever needs doing done. And the nationality matters not. And in that spirit, we have Amy Vickers, who's an Australian, who's an associate of Lloyd Pye, of the StarChildProject.com, I believe. Amy, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Vincent. Great to be here.
Give us a little bit of background about yourself.
Well, I'm glad you asked. I've been with the Star Child Project actually since 2004. I'm the second most senior member, and I came on initially as a webmaster and worked my way up to being chief of operations, which is just basically a fancy word for chief cook and bottle wash. I do pretty much whatever Lloyd Pye, who's the head of the organization, needs done. And Lloyd's been involved with the project since 1999. He was the founder, and the Star Child Project is an organization, just an informal organization. We're not like a big corporation, a bunch of people in suits. We're just a bunch of guys and girls who are interested in finding out the truth about an incredible skull called Starchild Skull, which we've tested. It's 900 years old. It's a real bone skull. You can go to the website, StarChildProject.com, and see all kinds of pictures and videos about it. So it is an actual real bone skull of an actual real being that lived on planet Earth, actually, in Mexico about 900 years ago. And right now, we're just uncovering some new DNA evidence that indicates that the skull might actually be alien.
Well, how exactly could something indicate that it was alien?
Well, I hate to jump in being technical on you right away, but basically it comes down to DNA. There are two kinds of DNA in all of us, all humans, pretty much all complex life on planet Earth. There's nuclear DNA and there's mitochondrial DNA. And mitochondrial DNA is perhaps much better understood than nuclear DNA. It is very similar across all humans. This is a little complicated again, but for anyone that knows what a base pair is, they're the four building blocks that make up DNA. And
well, that's how you tell the difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Amy Vickers from the Star Child Project. And we'll be right back after the break. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Jamming right here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show, live from the future, from the sunny slave capital, Auckland, New Zealand. It's a terrible, terrible world out there, but thankfully you don't have to spend it with terrible, terrible people all the time. And so we have a wonderful person here, Amy Vickers from the Star Child Project. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Vincent. You're too kind to me.
I know. Now, we're talking about a possibility of having an alien-human hybrid. Now, when we talk about possibility, this is scientifically based. This is something that is backed up with copious quantities of evidence and facts and everything. And the people who are the detractors of this project keep coming up with all these arguments that, incidentally, are all wrong and or have already been addressed and are still wrong.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the story of the Star Child Project in a nutshell from where I come from. Little shoestring organization trying to discover something that could hold some key to the mysteries of human origin or maybe even alien origin or something absolutely mystical and ridiculous in proportion regardless, being subverted by a bunch of idiots.
You're so eloquent, Vincent.
Well, then, girl. But beyond that, you're actually coming into what I call the plateau before the plunge, where you've been working so hard for so long and made heaps of progress, but there's still way, way more to be made. And you're just waiting for that one kind of opportunity to come along that'll make all of that stuff happen.
Yes, and we're actually getting really close to it. The key to all of this, we've been working on this skull for about 12 years now. We've had more experts than I can name for you in an hour look at this and tell us we have something really incredible. They ruled out every kind of disease, every kind of deformity, all of the stuff that keeps getting thrown at us by people who are ignorant or don't want to take the time to look at it has already been addressed, has already been ruled out, and yet we have to keep listening to all these people coming at us and saying, oh, it's this or it's that, and you people are all wasting your time. And at the end of the day, it comes down to there's only one way to prove this, and that is to get the whole genome, to test every shred of DNA in this thing, hold it up against what we know human DNA is supposed to look like, and see just how different it is. And that's pretty much the only it is or it is an answer. And right now we've got about 1%. We need to do the whole genome, which is huge. We have about 1% of it right now. But from that 1%, we've already established that there is a massive amount of difference between the DNA of this skull and the DNA of humans and indeed just about anything on Earth. There's a big database in America where they catalog all of the genetic research that gets done. And so we've been comparing some of the DNA to everything in this whole database, and segments of it are coming back unlike anything previously tested on planet Earth. So we're really close. We've got little shreds of that proof, but just not enough to stop people from finding wiggle room, from finding ways to say that we must have missed something or that we're wrong.
Yeah. Well, I can understand that. And after posting Lloyd Pye's videos, I began to notice that as well. Alien-human hybrid, Lloyd Pye and the Star Child Skull on The Breakfast Show, New Zealand, the 24th of April 2009, to date has 32,053 hits. Okay, you know, nothing to be chuffed at. Now, the interesting thing, though, is the enormous amount of commenting that goes on, you know, ranging from the Lloyd Pye is the most brilliant person in the world and we love him and he's great, he's doing his bit, etc., to the other end of the spectrum, which is the extreme shrill hurling of abuse across text, you know. And in between, however, this is where the most interesting part is where you have scientists who are deniers debating with scientists who are for. Both of people who have enormous amounts of facts on their side, one of which is kind of using a bit of ad hominem arguments and such mixed in with facts, but and of course that's the scientist denier, not the and you know what was funny is that it defines for me issues like this define people's personalities. How they react to this is the way that they react to everything. Okay, you know, whether or not it's a chemtrail or a Bilderberg or a fluoride or any other topic, they class them all instantly as total bunk and go about trying to prove that they're total bunk, as opposed to doing what a scientist does and letting the evidence lead his own conclusion.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Science used to be a bunch of really smart people sitting around coming up with a theory and then spending as long as it took the rest of their lives trying to disprove it. And these days it's the opposite. People protect whatever their theory is, whatever their belief is, whatever it is that they're holding sacred to the death. And it's just ridiculous. They go out of their way to avoid being challenged. It's not what science was ever intended to be. It's turned itself into politics.
Well, yeah, and it's been corrupted by politics, and this is the thing. Scientists, you know, and you go to any class or anything like that, anywhere near a scientist, and they use all this equipment and this drastically different type of discourse and language and the way that they speak and understand things, very little of which is publicly approachable and or ready to give a press conference in a lot of ways. You know, I mean, they're just not that kind of people, okay? That's what you got politicians for. But they are now bridging the gaps, and particularly when it comes to, say, climate change science, for example. The scientists are coming out on the pulpits and giving these big swimming speech. It's like they're like the climate Obamas. It's unbelievable. What's happened to these people? I mean, all this hopey and changey and begging for changey type of selling out to push an agenda rather than the idea of being self-restricted. And I think that's what science really was born from, is people who were very moralistic and had a strong belief in God and wanted to challenge their own humanity a lot of the time when with scientific tools and be able to disprove them so that they would never, like, conquer God or something. That's just a total theory on my part. But the difficulty for me is that when we get into scientific arguments and debates, I enter them entirely with the knowledge that I am no scientist. However, I also do it with the knowledge that a lot of scientists aren't scientists either.
That's true. It's unfortunate that so many people, there are words that get people excited. You were speaking to me earlier about the word conspiracy. All you have to do is call someone a conspiracy theorist and they're immediately discredited, no matter what they're doing or what they're saying. All you have to do is call someone a pseudoscientist, and that's just basically means a person who's pretending to do science but really isn't. And it immediately discredits them and it gets everyone's hackles raised. But most of what's being done these days is within the truest definition pseudoscience. It's people defending a position based on what they think or what they believe instead of going after what the real facts are. And so they love accusing us of being pseudoscientific when really a lot of what we're doing is just trying to translate things out of that jargon into a language that normal people can understand. And because we dare to try and make this understandable to us, the unwashed masses, it immediately just rules us out for so many people. Just how dare we? You must be pseudoscientists. Forget it. Don't listen to these people. They're crazy.
The masses must be kept in the dark. That's what they're
Oh, it is. Science is like the new religion. Just we don't have to tell them this. They don't have to understand. It's like church used to be all in Latin so people couldn't understand it. Now science is all in this jargon, which is based on Latin for the most part. It's the same thing. It's controlling people by limiting access to understanding of information.
Yeah. Oh, the frustration for me is that these are the people that advise the government now. And we've got people that advise the government on everything, okay? There's always this head scientific advisor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they all think the way that we've just been describing. So why is it any difficulty for anybody to assume that the government would be so ill-advised by arrogant, dipshit Muslims that are unable to accept new ideas or reason with people or look at evidence. And so, therefore, society would be going to hell in a handbasket. And sure enough, it is! You know? And this kind of discord with the scientific community, and I believe that they're now splitting into factions now. There's the actual pseudoscientists, who are the big liars and cheats and frauds and all of that, who incidentally are very well funded. Because they lie and cheat and fraud, and it benefits a lot of people to have people with credentials to parlay their agenda. However, the government side of things, they're just dumb as sticks in mud. And they'll just take any advice that's given to them, not question it.
Well, I think it's a system that has been set up now where there is no way for anyone in a position of power to really get the truth about anything. Especially here in the States, it's almost like the lobbyists just get to write the laws directly themselves. And there are so many people who would stand to lose money if we could prove something like alien reality, that they may not go to a future politician and say, hey, if you make sure that no one ever talks about aliens, we'll get you elected. But in a roundabout way, that's kind of what they do. If you don't denounce everything except what we're doing, if you don't accept our truth and denounce everyone else's, we're not going to support you, and we're powerful, and we're the people who are going to get you elected or not.
It's a very corrupt system. Nobody expects the scientific inquisition.
It's pretty much like that. It's a very unfortunate system where people get fired for expressing a dissenting opinion, for questioning the status quo. And if you have gone through hundreds of thousands of dollars of college education, put 20 years of your life into becoming a professor and trying to get that tenure, and then you write one paper or you make one lecture that goes out on the internet and becomes viral, that speaks against the establishment, that's enough to throw your entire life's work, all of that money, all of that education, all of that effort down the toilet. I mean, these aren't evil people sitting around thinking, oh, how can we screw with the world? These are people who are just looking out for themselves and their families, and how do I do as well as I can for myself? And there just aren't enough people out there willing to throw away that much time and education and money just to prove a point, even if it is the right thing to do ethically or for their professional integrity.
If you look at your employment status and your boss is paying you, say, $100,000 a year, you've got a wife and two children, and you have to, you know, support them. And currently, you know, everything's going pretty well. You know, you've got a decent car, your children are getting the best education money can buy, and everybody's happy, and it's all sweet as, and you've only got a little bit of debt. Throw onto that, your boss says to you, you have to now say something like this, which you know to be a lie, and you've got your entire life's credibility on stake, and now you're faced with the choice of, do I want to have my credibility, or do I want to have a peaceful, happy, enjoyable life where I'm actually capable of getting all the stuff that I need for myself and my family? And a lot of people make that choice, you know, and you can see why they would make it. Doesn't make it right, though.
Well, I agree with you, and you're... If you just look at the people who are coming out, it's the retired politicians, it's the deathbed, well, actually, yes, this was real. There was a massive UFO sighting in Phoenix, Arizona that everyone denounced. They threw some stupid press conference where they pulled out some guy in an alien suit in handcuffs and just laughed the whole thing off. Well, once the mayor of Phoenix had retired and they basically couldn't do anything to him, he's now come out and said, yes, it was real. We have no explanation. It was not a military exercise. That was an actual UFO sighting, and I profoundly regret what I did. But at the time, for all these years, he's just been playing along for the money, for the position. It's not until after people have nothing to lose, or if they're near the end of their life, or they're out of power anyway, that they're free to say these things. But as people are getting older and getting closer to the end of their life, we are having more and more and more people coming out of the closet with these stories, just proving what we've all been saying all along.
Well, in the words of Fight Club, and this is what it reminds me of, it's only after we've lost everything that we're free to do anything. You know, and that kind of reigns true for me, is that when people feel that there is no consequence that can befall them, that they're not already suffering worse already, I mean, sure, they'll come out. But again, them coming out at a later date rather than earlier on, it means that they have in turn dispensed an inordinate amount of suffering on the people who've been trying to fight for the truth the whole time, that the secret has been kept and been ridiculed and gone through the process. I don't like that, you know. I'm always a fan of doing things now, because there's no better time than the present. There's only one moment in all of history and in all of eternity. It's this one right here. You know, what are you waiting for? If you're trying to enlighten humanity, save human life, or do anything bigger than just yourself, why do you need an excuse to do it later?
Well, I think that's the age-old argument. Would I rather set a good example for my children, or would I rather have them fed and clothed and going to a decent school? It's really easy to sacrifice yourself, but these are, for the most part, there are people with families that are depending on them. Lloyd Pye, who is just a hero for so many people in our field, went most of his life on the brink of bankruptcy, no wife, no children, basically living like a hermit, because that gave him the freedom to ask questions, to do the work he wanted to do. But if he'd had the 2.3 kids and the dog and the mortgage and all the rest of it, there's no way he could have done what he's doing. He probably never would have seen the Star Child skull.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Is that something that makes families a lot tougher to deal with? Is that you're kind of tied to them in a certain way, and it's both a good thing and a bad thing in a lot of ways. You know, and I find a lot of people, when they get into alternative levels of research about whatever the topic may be, they find it remarkably difficult to kind of relate to their families anymore. And it drives people apart, and it sort of puts a wedge in between the relationship that you can have with your loved ones. And, you know, just recently, George Heminger, who's a contributor for Russia Today, his family left him, you know. In California, over this radiation thing. He wants to bug out and they want to stay, so they left him. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we'll be right back after the break with my very special guest. I want to dub it. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud partnership with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. My very special guest is Amy Vickers from the Star Child Project. Welcome back. Now, what we wanted to do is get into the actual evidence of the Star Child's skull. And firstly, I want to talk about deformities. Now, these are some of the explanations that are given up for why the Star Child skull couldn't possibly be an alien-human hybrid, and it's all silly and blah, 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 because it looks like this deformity or that deformity or rather the other. How is it not a deformity?
Well, I'm afraid I'm not hearing you perfectly well at the moment, but I'll try and follow through anyway. I think you're asking me what are the explanations that people have given trying to say that it's not a Star Child, it's just some kind of normal deformity. There is actually a whole list of them. The most common one is cradle-boarded hydrocephalic. If you look at the skull, it looks kind of like it's blown up, like someone stuck a balloon in a normal skull and blown it up to make the sides of the skull stick out much more than they ought to. And that can be caused by a different condition called hydrocephaly. But it's really easy to rule that out. It basically just means that there's fluid inside the skull causing pressure that blows it up like a balloon. But in the case of the Star Child skull, there's actually a crease down the center of the skull, which is a weak point that if there had been pressure inside the skull, that would have been the biggest point, and instead it's actually a dent in the skull. So those are really...
Yeah. Go on. Can you hear me, Amy?
no, I really can't hear you well at all. Do you want to try just calling me back?
All right. Well, we'll try and reconnect you.
Okay. I'm sorry about that.
All right. Okay. Well, see, what happens is a lot of people come up with arguments that it's, in fact, a deformity. It's really not. There's no known deformity that has this kind of combination, this sort of working and looking like this. Amy, I believe you're back on the air with us now.
Yes, I am. Can you hear me all right?
Yep. You're coming through
Wonderful.
Just fine. Okay. What kind of explanations do people give to try and bat away the Star Child skull that are wrong?
Well, there's actually a whole list of them on the Star Child Project website, starchildproject.com. But just to rattle a bunch of them off, there is everything from genetic conditions like progeria, which is just a horrible and fatal condition that that affects newborns. They usually don't make it till even 10 years of age. But unfortunately, although this is a tragic condition, it is not responsible for the Star Child skull. The other favorites are cradle boarding to explain the flattened back of the head. That's a cultural practice where a skull is strapped to a board to deliberately change the shape of the head, or sometimes it's just left on a hard surface for too long a period of time and the soft bones of the baby's skull are flattened like the surface that it's laid on. Just any kind of genetic condition you can think of. Crouzon's disease. There are a couple of trisomy conditions. Trisomy 21 in particular gets thrown out a lot. These are just all different genetic conditions that can cause things like shallowing of the eye sockets, which is present in the skull, like an abnormally flattened rear of the skull, which is also present. But all of these conditions have an effect somewhere else. It's the old Newtonian, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. In order to make the shape of a skull look like the Star Child, certain things would have to happen which cannot happen in a human. It would physically kill you. For example, if you wanted to strap an infant's head to a board to make the back of it flat like the Star Child's is, you'd have to bend the head of that child forward so much, just tilting its chin down towards its chest so much that the child would suffocate and die. I mean, we could spend hours going over all of the reasons why this can't be the case or that can't be the case. And the bottom line is, even if you're a scientist or a doctor and you look at this just for a matter of minutes and all you're looking at is the skull itself, it's easy to say, oh, this is a child who had this, that, or the other condition. But if you look at the CAT scan, if you look at the x-rays, if you look at some of the other tests that we've done, it rules out those knee-jerk conclusions that people jump to. And it's left us with something that really legitimately is different from anything we've ever seen before. I mean, we wouldn't be wasting our time on it if this had an easy answer. We would have gotten that easy answer right away. We wouldn't still be going through now trying to do the DNA testing to give us that final exactly what is wrong with it, what is different from human.
Yeah. Well, this is the funny thing, right? These people think that, oh, these people just must have spent 12 years of their life looking at something because they didn't check the first decimal place on a genetic test.
Exactly. There are so many just rented experts out there. They're mercenary lab coats for hire that will pretty much say whatever you want them to say in front of a camera. And they just come up with the same cradle-boarded hydrocephaly over and over and over again. That was one of the very first things that got ruled out. A very brilliant Canadian specialist named Dr. Ted Robinson back in 2003 sat down with 11 other experts, and these are all top level guys, like the head of the pediatrics unit at a major hospital in New Orleans, like one of the guys from the Mayo Clinic. These are all credentialed experts, 11 of them sitting around a table for over a month going through trying to figure out what is this skull, what can we attribute it to. And these guys all put their names to a report. They all put their professional reputations on the line to say, this is not a known deformity. This is not a deliberate deformation like strapping a child's head to a board. We've never seen anything like this. It's not in any of the textbooks. This really is something new. And they didn't even call it a human skull. They called it a human-like skull because it's so different from human. They couldn't categorically say, yes, it is indeed human. So it's not like we're all just sitting around trying to make something out of nothing. This really is an extremely important, very significant skull that we've put huge amounts of time and money and effort and thought into. What can we do next? How can we prove it? And it just keeps coming back to the DNA, which is what we're working on now.
Now, speaking of money, there are also the arguments that you're doing it for the money.
Well, shortly after I met Lloyd Pye back in 2004, he actually declared bankruptcy. He had put his entire personal wealth, not that there was a huge amount of it, but he had been a reasonably successful author before this skull came along. He put his entire career on hold and just basically stopped trying to make any money, so he couldn't be accused of money grubbing. So he went bankrupt, and basically every penny that people donate to us or that we get from purchases of books or ebooks goes right back into the expenses associated with trying to get this skull tested. I mean, we are we're happy people, but we're rich in spirit, but that's about it.
Come
this
on,
is
people.
Not a big money maker for us, I guarantee you that much.
Yeah, come on, people, buy an ebook or something. Amy needs a new pair of shoes.
Well, I don't know about that, but petrol here just went up to about $4 a gallon, so
You need to get yourself a bicycle, love. Don't you know it's Agenda 21 time? Everybody's going to have to either go onto public transport or have pedal power or something like that, because the gas will just be too expensive for personal conveyance for anything other than the elite wealthy scumbaggery.
Oh, look, as a former Australian, I can only warn all of you people in the same parts of the world, don't come to America if you ever want to use public transport. It's woeful here. In fact, I don't think there is actually any public transport within 100 miles of my current location. So it's not good in those terms. And it is difficult when, you know, you have to drive halfway across the country to see a geneticist or to see a film producer or to see whatever it is you need to go and see. I mean, I'm not meaning to poor mouth, but all of these things are expenses, and it's not like we're making a huge amount of money from this. One day we hope that there will be some remuneration for it, and we already have plans to funnel that money right back into doing more projects, to doing more research. I mean, the Starchild skull is the most obviously non-human skull that I know of in the world right now. But the very close second on the list is a massive collection of conehead skulls in Peru. And some of these are quite obviously just normal human skulls that people have deliberately deformed the shape of the head to look elongated. But other skulls, you just can't physically make a human skull into these shapes. You can't double the size of a human brain. You can't double the thickness of human bone. You can't make it stick 18 inches up the back of your head. I mean, there are other things in the world that are important that need to be studied, and we're already looking to the future to being able to move forward in those directions as well.
Okay, question in the chat room here. Could it have possibly been a one-off deformity?
Well, actually, there are deformities that can be one-off deformities that we've never seen before. That is the argument that we keep getting thrown up at us. That's the reason we need to recover the whole genome. But what most people don't realize is that there are parts of your DNA that can be changed, that can be deformed. And there are parts of your DNA that just can't. If certain parts of your DNA are different or are too different from what they ought to be, your mother's body will realize, oh, there is a problem with this fetus where it will not survive, and she'll usually miscarry before she can even birth the child. There are others that will kill an infant very early on into its life. The level of difference in this skull, if a human being was born with a skull like this, somehow with just human eyes and a human brain shoved into this skull, it could not survive. We absolutely have had multiple experts say it would be impossible for a human to survive with this skull. So there's obviously something else going on in this particular case.
Now, you're talking about a human survival. What if it was just like born that way and then just died instantly? Is that a possibility?
It pretty much would. Now, the specific thing that a lot of people are drawn to that indicate that it would die, is inside your skull, there's actually a little shelf. It's called your internal occipital protuberance, and it's a little shelf that supports the weight of your brain. Without that shelf, your brain, believe it or not, will actually fall out through your neck hole. The pressure of your brain will start pressing down, and it will start squeezing your cerebellum. That's the little part of your brain right at the very base of your skull. It's responsible for all your movement, your breathing, all that important life-giving stuff. It'll start pushing that out through your neck hole. And once that starts happening, you die pretty quickly. If you lose the ability for that part of your brain to function, you can't breathe, your heart can't beat, you can't move, you're pretty much dead. Now, in the case of the Starchild skull, it doesn't have that ledge. So if this being was lying on its back for its entire life, then it's possible that it wouldn't die. But if it was lying on its back for its entire life, then there are other reasons that would have led to its death. So there really just is no way that this could be a deformity. Just to put it in perspective for you, I mentioned earlier there are two kinds of DNA, your nuclear DNA and your mitochondrial DNA. Your mitochondrial DNA is 16,569 base pairs long. Just imagine a big, like a string of pearls, 16,569 pearls long. Now, within all humans, every single human, every single person on planet Earth right now, in that 16,500 pearls, there are only 120 of those pearls that are different. This is a really important part of your DNA. It's the part of your DNA that tells your body how to make energy. You cannot survive on this planet without this part of your DNA in the order that it's in, looking the way that it looks, or your body just is unable to function. It can't make proteins. It can't make energy. You can't exist. And already, as we've gone through looking at just a small percentage of these 16,500 pearls in the Starchild skull, we have so many more deformities. Like, for example, in one section of it, 157 of those pearls long, there is only one pearl difference across all humans in the world. There are 17 pearls different, 17 nucleotides different in the Starchild skull, just in that one small section. This being should not have been able to survive. It should not have been able to produce proteins the way that we do. If you or me was born with mitochondrial DNA that looked like this, we wouldn't have made it very far. We would have broken down and as a cluster of cells in our mum's tummy. There is no way to say this is a one-off deformity at this point. We've gone past that. This is something different.
All right. Well, that's a good place to leave it. We're going on break, ladies and gentlemen. We love you very much. And Amy Vickers is my very special guest from the StarChildProject.com. Cruise in there and buy books and ebooks and whatnot. And we'll be right back after the break at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there. And also check out the articles at GorillaMedia.co.nz. We'll be right back.
Except if that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times they are a-changing.
And welcome back. Oh, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. And incidentally, it's also the lighter side of genocide, because when the world's so full of madness and chaos, if you lose your sense of humour, you'll go friggin' nuts. My very special guest is Amy Vickers from the StarChildProject.com. Join us back from break. Welcome.
Good to be back.
Fantastic. Now, there's the question of, like, other skulls and things of that nature, but I kind of want to get into something a little more here. The very specific differences in the skull, how is it different from a human being's skull?
too many to rattle off for you, but the main ones are the bone itself is much thinner and much lighter than normal human bone. We're talking a half to a third as thick as normal bone, and we're talking two or three times stronger. When they went to cut bone samples off the skull for DNA testing, I think it was actually the second time, the first lab that did any didn't mention anything, but Lloyd Pye was actually there in the room when they were cutting the samples the second time, and they use a tungsten blade. It's just a little rotary cutting tool that they use. They cut the control sample from a normal human skull, just cut it, no problems, like butter. They got a clean new Dremel blade, went to cut the Starchild bone, and this blade literally bounced off. So they had to switch at that point to a diamond tip blade, which then did cut it. But for the bone to be that much harder, that a rotary cutting tool with a tungsten carbide blade would just bounce off the bone like that is a very significant difference. Inside the bone, there are actually fibers woven through the matrix of the bone. No one has ever seen these before. We literally do not know what these fibers are because there is no test invented yet to pull them out of the bone so we can test them and find out what they are. They are that unique. There is also a reddish residue inside the bone. It's not dried marrow, it's not dried blood, it's 900 years old. After 900 years, there is nothing left inside the cancellous holes. That's the part of your bones that are hollow on the inside where your bone marrow is. After 900 years, the bacteria in your body have scoured these clean. There is nothing left. And yet in the Starchild skull, we have this reddish residue, the same situation where there is no test invented yet for us to be able to go in and pull some of that out and find out what it is without contaminating the sample. The eye sockets are much, much shallower, shaped completely differently. The holes called the optic foramens that your nerves for your eyeball go through are in a completely different place. The inner ears are twice the size of a normal human inner ear. If you are a breathing human and you reach around behind your head, you'll feel a lump near right above where your neck muscles attach. That's called your inion or your external occipital protuberance. Everyone has one. If you think you don't, just take your finger, follow it up your neck, along your spine, and you'll get to a point on your skull where you feel a lump. You can basically not be a mammal on this planet with a neck and not have one of those lumps. And yet the Starchild skull does not have one. It doesn't have a lump on the outside. It doesn't have a shelf on the inside. The physical shape of the outside of the skull, completely different from a normal human skull. No frontal sinuses, no brow ridges, very small lower face, very small cheekbones, tiny little teeth. I mean, teeth the size of a small child. That's why a lot of our experts have said, well, this looks like it may be a child. There are other experts who've said, well, no, it can't be a child for this, this, and this reason. So we're still a little up in the air on whether it's a child or an adult. But there is just nothing about this skull that is the same. We can see from the muscle attachments, the little marks on the bone where the muscles attached, that it had very small chewing muscles, very small neck muscles. Everything about it is completely different from a human skull.
Yep. You kind of think to yourself, hey, if absolutely everything is different about this, there's nothing the same at all in any way, shape, or form to a human, to a human, then it's not human, you know?
If you saw
a dog lying dead on the road, you didn't know what a dog was, and you went over to the dog and you sort of looked at him, you know, and he's got a wet nose and, you know, four legs and a tail and covered in fur and stuff like that, and go, you know what? I don't think this is human.
Yeah, really. You would think that. I mean, the only similarity that it has is it has the same number and kind of the same basic percentage of the skull divided into the bone plates that make up our skulls. That's about it. You know, when you're a baby, your skull's made up of a whole bunch of loose pieces that kind of join together and make your solid skull as you age. That part of it is kind of the same. It is made of calcium hydroxyapatite, which is the basic stuff that bone is made out of. But those are pretty broad similarities, and yet we still have people jump up and down and say, oh, it's just a deformed child, this is such a waste of time. But really, there are so many fundamental differences. This is just off the chart different.
Yeah, Yep. Well, you know, and it makes you wonder, how do you actually deal with the criticism? I mean, does it become emotionally haranguing on you to have morons that are questioning things that you've already answered a million freaking times? Does it explain to them again and have them harass you even more anyway?
We actually make ourselves very easily available by email for anyone who wants to do that. And we actually have a good old laugh. Lloyd sent me a fun one today. My personal favorite is the person who just writes, "My friend told me about this and I don't believe it. Convince me." Like, the most important thing I can do in the world right now is convince this one person who won't even go to the website or do any research on their own. But I guarantee you, anyone out there, starchildproject.com has so much information. You will be busy there for quite some time if you want to educate yourselves.
Yes, indeed. And we'll be archiving this interview on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Coming up after the break, more from Amy Vickers from the StarChildProject.com. And also, one thing I'd like to advise people to do is go to the website at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and check out the archives that we already have there. There's quite a number of interviews with incredibly amazing people. We'll be right back.
In the belly of the vulture, watch your back. There's no civilians, women, children, frontlines, listen. Consider this a distant early warning. The fire's imminent, pollution gathering dust particles funneling through smokestacks, airwaves, bandwidth, disinformation too fed. Check the labels, delete the virus, alert the masses.
Welcome back. Welcome back to hour number two, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. My somewhat fabulous special guest is Amy Vickers, and she joins us now. And we want to talk about the US government. Now, supposedly, the men in black will turn up whenever you discover something of alien origin, and they'll hypnotize you with the thingamajigger and go, wah, and you won't remember Jack about it. But apparently that hasn't happened to the Star Child crew yet. In fact, they've been remarkably helpful, Amy, haven't they?
They really have. I wish I had a fun story to tell everyone about the time I got roughed up in a washroom, but that hasn't happened yet. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for it. But back in 1999, within a week of Lloyd Pye first laying eyes on the skull, he got up in front of the largest UFO Congress in America at the time, the UFO Conference in Laughlin, Nevada, and said, okay, now if anyone here is from the government, and everyone assumes there are government plants there, and they want to come take this skull from me, just ask for it. I won't fight you. I won't put up any kind of a stink. I'm just going to quietly go off and do my research. But everyone here, I want you to know, if I turn up dead, I didn't fight them for it. They just killed me out of spite. And so he feels like that's been his lucky charm that's seen him safe all of these years. But I really think it's just because this is the kind of disclosure that people can swallow. We've had the Catholic Church come out recently say they wouldn't have any problem with there being aliens. We've had various other religious leaders coming out saying, well, it just proves God's greater creation. This isn't like an alien aircraft flying over and landing on the White House lawn where it's going to directly challenge the established government. It's a 900-year-old, very, very, very dead, very, very, very non-threatening skull. It's the kind of thing that people can look at and not be scared. It's about as intimidating, well, maybe a little more intimidating as those microscopic snail things they thought they'd found on Mars a few years ago. I mean, this is the kind of thing that could be exactly what the governments of the world have been looking for. We know there's aliens. We want to tell you there's aliens, but we don't want to scare you. We don't want to create panic, and we don't want to lose our power. Oh, look, there's this skull that's exactly what we're looking for. It's non-challenging, it's non-threatening. Let's leave them alone and let them do their own thing. And so that's pretty much what's happened. No men in black, no suits, no scary phone calls in the middle of the night. And everyone's just been as helpful as they can. When we needed clearance from customs to take the skull up to Canada to do some testing, they just bent over backwards for us. They really have gone out of their way, I think, to try and enable us to do what we're trying to do.
Now, the conspiracy theorist in me thinks that it might be an inside job.
Well, there might be something to that. For those of you who don't know, Lloyd Pye was actually a U.S. intelligence agent during the Vietnam War. But I understand that they had him doing background checks on all the mistresses of the local military brass. So I don't know that he necessarily got into any top secret black ops stuff back then. So I don't know about that.
Either that, or because of the knowledge about the mistresses of the top brass, he's now blackmailing them to advance his Star Child project agenda.
I hadn't thought of that, but you know what? We could have a new conspiracy theory here.
Oh, awesome. I've created another one.
Yes, founded by Vinnie Eastwood on American Freedom Radio. Good one.
All right. Thank you very much, Amy. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen. It's the lighter side of genocide, where it's all about comedy and conspiracy all blending into one because, hey, if the world's not funny, it's definitely a conspiracy. But I could be wrong. I certainly hope I am. We'll be right back after the break.
Unity means solidarity.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about the lighter side of genocide. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com, proudly brought to you in collaboration with GuerrillaMedia.co.nz. My somewhat fabulous guest is Amy Vickers, coming as live from the United States, I believe. Welcome back, Amy.
Good to be back, although I resent being only somewhat fabulous. What does a girl have to do to get all the way fabulous around here?
Just keep doing what you're doing, you'll get there eventually. No, seriously. Now, one thing we wanted to get into, what was it? Somebody was saying something in the chat room that we wanted to comment on, the dissent among skeptics and all of that kind of stuff.
There were a couple of things in the chat room. Just firstly, there are some people wanting to know how old the Star Child skull was when it died. And that is something that our experts have some conflicting viewpoints on. The section of the maxilla, the upper jawbone that we have, has unerupted teeth. It's got teeth up in the bone waiting to come down, which for most people, that means that you're a child, in this case, a child 4, 5, or 6 years old, with those adult teeth waiting to come down. But at the same time, the teeth that are already in the mouth look a lot like adult teeth. And furthermore, they're ground down. I mean, they're worn down flat to a level where you would have to just be eating rocks and sand all day, every day for at least a decade to wear your teeth down to that extent. So even if it was a very gritty, sandy kind of a diet, this couldn't have been a 5 or 6 year old child. It just wouldn't have had time to wear its teeth down to that extent. A child just doesn't have the strength in their jaw muscles to grind their teeth down to that level, even if they're just eating rocks. So really right now we have no firm answer. Could have been a child, could have been a teenager, could have been a 20-something, or it could be just some completely different off the wall. It lives for hundreds of years and so it needs the ability to have multiple sets of teeth like a shark. We really just don't know the answer at this stage.
It would be cool if we did have teeth like a shark, though, because there's plenty of people out there with outrageous dental health.
Well, it's actually not uncommon. A lot of people have, usually it's just your front teeth. You'll get two sets of front teeth. But it's in our genes. Somewhere there is a gene that's not quite turned all the way off in some of us that tells us to grow more than one set of teeth. Most of us, that gene's turned off, we just grow the one set. So, you know, maybe one of these differences in the DNA that we were talking about lets it grow teeth over and over and over again as needed.
Mmm, the repetitive teeth skull coming to a store near you.
Well, I tell you what, it's an argument for genetic research, isn't it? I'll take a booster shot and grow a new set of teeth any day of the week.
Hey, well, you know, that the I'm sure the dental industry will come up against you if you've managed to develop a product like that.
Yeah, there's whatever we do, there's always going to be someone more interested in profit than the betterment of society. But, you know, that's what your listeners are for. We're the resistance against the idiots.
Yeah, imagine an entire society where everybody just has a dashing smile. But I don't think everybody would be able to afford the shot anyway. Now, the whole series of differences within the Star Child skull, okay, and then let's just be from my perspective, you know, bear with me a second. We've got a human-alien hybrid skull, quite possibly. Okay, what kind of questions does this pose for human origin?
Well, Lloyd Pye actually came to the Starchild skull through doing work specifically in human origins. He's a big proponent of what's called the intervention theory, which for anyone who is a Zachariah Sitchin fan, it's basically that. It's basically saying that instead of humans being created by God in the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve and the, you know, the tree and the snake and all that noise, it was actually not gods with a God with a big G, it was gods, multiple gods with a small g, who created humans in basically a laboratory, who took their alien DNA and took the DNA from primates that were native to planet Earth. These are the pre-humans, the Miocene apes, your average gorilla or chimpanzee, but not as strong. Basically, the earliest known writings, the very first civilization to develop a written language, were the Sumerians. And a lot of this is based on their historical texts, where they wrote that these aliens that they called gods, multiple small g, came and created humans. This would play very much into that idea that humans are a product of some kind of direct alien intervention instead of some God intervention or some random evolution. It's not to say there's no such thing as evolution. It's just to say that there may not be one species to another species macroevolution. There's definitely microevolution with a species changing within itself over time. But I think, like most things, the real answer is going to come from taking all of these different theories that everyone has and finding some common ground in the middle. I don't think there is any one answer where, yes, it's all evolution, or yes, it's all intervention, or yes, it's all this, or yes, it's all that. It's going to be bits and pieces from all of these different areas coming together to get closer to what the actual truth really is. So as far as the Starchild skull goes, having that proof of alien reality, and I should mention that some parts of the Starchild skull's genes that we've recovered are exactly like human genes. We actually found a pretty good section of the DNA that was an exact match to a section of DNA on human chromosome 1. Now, that's not necessarily to indicate that it's a hybrid between a human and an alien. It just means that maybe parts of our DNA are so important that they are the same in a human as they are in maybe a very similar human-like species that the Starchild clearly is. Now, the genetics are kind of a tricky thing because so many people just don't understand them. Even geneticists really don't understand all that much about genetics. I mean, we're light years from where we were even a decade ago in terms of our understanding, but it is still kind of a great mystery as to what a lot of our genes do. I'm sure most of us still remember the term junk DNA. They used to say something like 95% of all of the DNA in the human body is just junk. It's rubbish that serves no useful purpose. And now they're realizing, hello, this is Amy. Okay. So I'm sorry, are we on the air? All right. So it looks like
Here we are. Fantastic. All right.
Great.
We're back in business.
Yes, we have.
Extremely sorry. Sorry, folks. Sorry. Yeah, massive, massive, monstrumental technical F-ups.
We'll invent a word for it. It's radioous interruptus.
Yeah. I think it'll go right along nicely with our Aurora Borealis. Speaking of Aurora Borealis, up in the north there, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. Old school evidence for alien intervention in the creation of the human race. Now, there are actually a lot of historical records through many cultures all over the world, including Chinese African and all over the world, basically, of this exact same story of these gods, some description of creatures, really, coming down from the heavens and then changing humanity all up DF.
Absolutely. And people like to just call anything that they don't understand religion. I was actually an archaeology student before I got on board with the Starchild Project. I majored in archaeology back in Flinders University in South Australia. And they told us point blank, first year, first semester, anything you don't understand that doesn't make sense, it's probably just something to do with religion and don't pay any attention to it. But these people don't say this is religion. They say this is our history. They say these gods came and they walked with us. They were on the ground with us, physically walking, talking, telling us to do things. Most of these gods wanted their people to find gold for them, which is exactly what the Sumerian tablets say they were here to do. In fact, the Sumerian description is very detailed. It says that they had damaged their ozone layer on their planet and they were using gold to repair it. Now, years ago, they floated the idea of shooting gold particles up into the atmosphere because they shield radiation from the sun. So the idea was put a mist of gold up over the ozone hole area, and it would basically be like a band-aid over the ozone layer. And way back 5,000 odd years ago, you've got the Sumerians saying that their gods told them they needed gold to repair their atmosphere. Now, how on earth is somebody these literally were one day nomadic people walking around the plains, killing animals, hunting, gathering, no structures, no society as we know it, very primitive people. Overnight, within literally a few years, overnight, these people go from stone tools, hunter-gatherer, to libraries, to universities, to medicine, to flowing water in every household. An elaborate sewage system. So they have fresh water and they have a way to get rid of their waste. This is massive advancement. And they don't say, oh, we evolved and we learned how to do it. They say, No, these gods came from space and they came in spaceships and they came onto planet Earth and they taught us how to do all this and they made us to be their slave species and this is what we do for them now. So, this is a very detailed document and it's echoed not in as much detail but in a lot of the main points. In almost every country in the world, the creation myths are so similar across the board that you've got to think, with that much smoke, with that many cave paintings of guys wearing alien helmets, with that many ancient carvings of people in spaceships, that there's got to be some smoke, some fire behind all this smoke.
Yep. And you'd have to be pretty blind not to be able to see that there's something there, And I first approached this kind of subject about the visitation theorem and the human slave species and all of that. And I thought, if I wanted some slaves, humans would be great slaves, man. They can do awesome stuff. They can even do complex operations, and they don't question their environment as long as you condition them to be pretty stupid.
Well, we kind of are. I'm sure we've all heard that we only access about 10%. 10% of our brain. Absolutely true. Why do we have the other 10%? Why are our muscles pound for pound 10 times weaker than chimpanzees or gorillas, supposedly the things we evolved from? There's a lot more evidence to this than people like to admit.
It's a deep and baffling mystery, and extremely interesting at the very least. We'll be right back after the break.
Yeah, yeah, and no one like me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Congratulations, you made it. Welcome to the Crusader. It's been a long time coming, yo.
Yeah,
but I'm here now. So what you wanna do? I'm the dude you really know. Flow like this, like this, like this. Let's do it. How many dudes you know move like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any. Not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know anybody. Check, check to the mic, check.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest is Amy Vickers from the StarChildProject.com. Now, the concept of, what was it called again, officially? Intervention theory?
Intervention theory, absolutely.
All right. So, and a cult has grown around this type of intervention theory, and they call it AA.
That's pretty funny.
Oh, sorry, I was just making a cheap joke at the alien invader's expense. Sorry. If I haven't offended any off-worldly, powers that are going to obliterate the Earth as a result, to extinguish my righteous cackle.
Well, you know what? That's something that we should probably talk about for a minute, because that's a question we get asked a lot. Okay, if this really is an alien skull, and that really does prove aliens are out there, where can I run and hide? Where is going to be safe? And I guess the bottom line answer is there probably isn't anywhere that's safe. If you have mastered intergalactic travel and genetic engineering to the level that they would have had to have had mastered in order to create humans, assuming intervention theory is correct, there's probably nothing you can do and nowhere you can go and no magic Tom Cruisian thing you can do to prevent an alien invasion. But frankly, if they were going to come and do something to us, they probably would have done it already. This skull was alive 900 years ago, and so that's at least 900 years that they haven't done anything. We could probably be an ant farm to them. They probably just really don't care that much about us to really want to come and do us any harm. What do you think?
Well, I've heard a lot of stuff. You know, I've researched a lot of things, and I can't prove or disprove anything specifically, but I do know what I've heard. Now, what I've heard is that there was a treaty signed by, I think, Delano Roosevelt or one of the guys after World War II, I think, to trade technology for human harvesting rights. And interestingly enough, that treaty was only signed with the United States. And incidentally, the United States has like 26,000 alien abductions reported a year, and the rest of the entire planet has about like 14. So it's a huge statistical difference. And, it gives poise for me that maybe human beings have been contacted by alien species and are, in fact, already living among us there's the possibility of shapeshifters. I watched this very interesting film called The Brandon Corey Story that was made by True TV, and they said they don't have any evidence to say that his footage of a reptilian shapeshifter eating a woman underneath a large building at a Bohemian Grove meeting, they can't disprove it. You know, there's so much really, really freaky stuff out there. I've read articles where people are talking about aliens materializing basically out of thin air, basically phase shifting from one physical dimension to another. It's like that they're able to change their appearance to us, kind of like, you know, how Frodo slips on the ring and he kind of disappears and he's still in the same place and all of that kind of thing. You just can't see him until he takes the ring off, and then all of a sudden there he is. Sort of like that, except capable of doing it via some genetic predisposition to be chameleonic or fourth dimensional or something like that, with an extra helix. Like we've got a double helix, and they talked about the possibility of a triple helix type creature that's capable of shapeshifting from one form into another or into many. You know, so, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's all open for debate. And I don't believe or disbelieve any of the things that I've just said. I just think that they're very interesting, and they're certainly something that I've heard.
And see, that's a whole lot closer to real science than anything someone in a lab coat right now is doing, saying, no, that can't possibly be true, what? I think that that's the exact right approach to take. Just leave it on the table, leave it open for debate. I certainly think, going back to what we were saying earlier, that the nice, non-threatening dead skull is something I'm much more comfortable facing as a reality than scary reptilian shapeshifters eating me at some point without my permission. So I can see why a lot of people wouldn't want to even consider that as a possibility. But I think in the absence of evidence disproving it, why not leave it on the table? That's always been our approach with the Starchild skull. Lloyd saw it the first time and told the owners, you know, it's probably a deformity, but let me go run some tests and get in touch with some contacts that I have, and we'll see what happens. And here we are 12 years later, and some of the things that we thought, we feel kind of silly leaving on the table, that it might be an alien, and look where we are now. We've got as solid a proof as anyone has ever had, as much tangible evidence as anyone ever had, that this really is an alien.
It really is an alien. I'm sick of
you. I'll quit at you.
yeah, well, this is the interesting thing, right? I mean, and if the government had heard about it, and again, we go back to that kind of Men in Black argument, you know, you've got to conceal aliens' existence and all of that. But in actual fact, I think the government and the media in some part really, really propagate the possibility of alien life to a large extent. I mean, the UN, for example, has recently, I think last year, appointed their alien ambassador. It's a little astrophysicist chick from Malaysia, right?
Well,
so if somebody comes down and says, take me to your leader, they'll take it to this little chick from Malaysia.
Well, I don't know. I can think of some people that she's probably better representative of the population of the Earth than some of the presidents that various countries have had at various times.
Giant cockroach is a better representative of humanity than some of the presidents that have been had.
But it's an important thing to have in place, I think. I agree with you that it's probably likely that there has been some contact at some point in the past already. It seems like you would require a level of complicity within the media in this day and age of internet and cell phone cameras and everything else to keep something that big a secret. But I think what they've really done is put so many shows, so many things making fun of the whole idea of aliens out there, that it's hard to have a real open, honest debate about it without someone like Michael Shermer, the world's foremost professional skeptic, going on a show like Larry King, where they were trying to have a serious discussion about the possibility. Michael Shermer shows up with a whole bunch of sex toys, calling them anal probes, and just kind of makes fun of the whole thing instead of having any kind of real serious inquiry. I think that's their main tool, just trying to make fun of it, put enough doubt in people's mind that when something like the Starchild comes along, you've got to fight tooth and nail against all of these people who are being skeptical and contrary just because they've been told that it's a good thing to be skeptical and contrary, not because it's necessarily the smart thing to do or the best thing to do, or even that it makes sense.
Have you ever seen that film, Thank You for Smoking? The scene where the guy is teaching his kid how to debate. And the question is, what's the best ice cream in the world? One person's arguing vanilla, one person's arguing chocolate. So in order to argue that vanilla's the best, I say it's the best ice cream, I wouldn't have any other. And the other person then says, well, okay, well, you don't believe in liberty or freedom then, because you're so fascist that you only believe the one thing. Totally out of context, right? But because the other person is becoming ridiculed and making look bad, he says, I'm not trying to argue and convince you, I'm trying to convince them, talking about all the people that are watching. And that's the thing about it, is that you can manipulate large amounts of foolish, young, innocent minds by making a little bit of fun about something, and you can also damage somebody's credibility irrevocably by doing so and shut them up for a long, long time. You know, this is the way that you distinguish a debate from an ambush. Okay, now me, I'm in favor of ambush, especially if it's politicians. But I don't do that to any of my guests. You know, I don't like inviting people onto my show so that I can have a go at them and that kind of thing. Even if I disagree with them, the basic premise of having this kind of show is sort of like an open slather platform for everybody who's talking about real interesting Shiite Muslim.
Well, I certainly appreciate that. We've had our share of ambushes, not to name names, but we were on a major cable network a couple of years ago doing a documentary that they assured us would take everything very seriously. And when the show came out, they wouldn't let us see it before it actually aired. And when it aired, they had cut in all this bad black and white B-movie footage of aliens from like the 1960s, and they had a scene of some cave woman being sexually molested by someone in an alien suit, and just horrible in terms of presenting an accurate and serious story, but very entertaining stuff. And it's just hard to argue with anyone that wants to do that. It's hard to have an adult discussion with anyone that thinks that that's the way they need to handle a topic.
Yep. I think if you want to be open-minded, you know, there's two certain extents to it. Now, firstly, you're open-minded enough to accept possibilities, and then the other one is open-minding up that you'll accept everything. You know, and the mind is not a sieve, nor should it be. It's supposed to catch certain things, but there does have to be a sieving process nonetheless. If you're going to believe in something, and this is where I kind of step off the mark, is if I'm actually going to be doing something regarding a particular topic, and it's not just a discussion up for debate and up for just thought, you know, something that I can do right in here, right now, very easy, I generally won't do a terribly large amount of research into it, but I'll certainly talk about it a heck of a lot with a researcher or an author. You know, and that's how I subsist. You know, I get my hump, my camel's hump of knowledge kind of filled up by discussing stuff that I have no idea about with somebody who knows what they're talking about. And I should think that's quite a reasonable process. However, It doesn't mean that I have to hang on every word and agree with everything. I'll just, you know, like I say, absorb it up, open slather. I don't really mind. Everybody deserves a say. And the only reason why we have a society nowadays where people feel afraid to say anything, with all this political correctness gone mad and everybody trying to watch their back for fear of what kind of criticism they might face in the media as the head of an organization saying this, that, or the other, I think that's all total BS. I think the whole idea of professionalism and credibility is a joke in current standing form. I mean, what's the yardstick that you measure professionalism and credibility? I mean, if a president was supposed to be, you know, somebody on high and all of that, it would be great, except for the fact that a lot of them are freaking mass murderers. You know, that's the thing. I won't vote for an American president because I don't like Republicans or Democrats. I won't vote for them because they're mass murderers. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Amy Vickers from the StarChildProject.com. And we'll be coming at you live from the future 5 days a week. All right, 5 days a week, 2 hours a day you can actually listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, and you check out the archive sections of the vinnieeastwoodshow.com, and you'll see our Kiwi Collaborators section, where we have interviewed more Kiwi activists than probably any other news agent on the planet to date, and also you can see Vinnie on other shows, and I've been on like something like 11, 12 shows now, you know, it's pretty interesting. I'm getting out there. What I find interesting is that there's so many places all over the world where people are doing the exact same thing as me. Isn't that great? And this isn't just isolated to, you know, the realm of radio or patriotism or anything. That's actually what life is really like. It's about a huge planet full of diverse individuals all doing, incidentally, the exact same thing and forgetting that they can come together on it. We'll be right back after the break, folks.
There's only one. Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? What is about? There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about just a little bit of history repeating. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. And incidentally, the vinnieeastwoodshow.com. Join us in the chat room live Monday through Friday, 5 till 7 p.m. Central. And also for the Kiwi listeners of the show, we're now at the new time we're going to endure throughout the winter of 10 a.m. till midday, Tuesday through Saturday. That's right. We're one day ahead of the United States. My very special guest joining us for the final segment today is still Amy Vickers. And, hey, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. Now, one thing I like to encourage people to do is be somewhat controversial and talk and say things on this show that they kind of haven't said on other shows or anything personal. Yeah, you got anything you want to get off your chest?
No, nothing. Nothing of that nature, I'm afraid. I'm not quite that interesting, but
all right. Free breezy and all G unit, as they say. Hey, well, it could be worse. After all, you know, there's a thing that needs to be done a lot more often, I think, and that's talking with people about the problems that you got, right? Particularly the problems that you have with other people. Myself, in particular, I find that if I talk and continue to talk to somebody who's really belligerent to me or something, eventually they become slightly less belligerent, and I get slightly annoyed by them. And so conversely, if I was to continue to keep talking to them and talking to them, it would improve even more. So what I find really strange is that in our society, instead of arguing with people and talking through issues, particularly, you know, way out kind of amazing concepts like the Star Child Skull human-alien hybrid, for example, why is it that people are just like suddenly turn and walk away? You know, what are they afraid of? What is it that they've got to lose, quite frankly? You think there's not enough hours in the day to obtain some knowledge today? You know? maybe that's a reptilian mindset, eh?
Sorry, there's not enough hours left in the universe for me to talk about anything of interest with you. You can just die, Steve.
Yes. I don't really comprehend to a large extent why people get switched off topics quite so quickly. I mean, for myself, for example, I'm a full-on climate denier, but I don't go pushing my climate denial in the face of Greenpeace activists and stuff like that quite so often. And maybe this is the difference between people who are just kind of, you know, like me, who are, you know, just trying to figure out what the heck is going on here in this freaking universe and have no bones about it either way, and people that kind of have an idea of what they want the world to be like and will prevent anybody from challenging it. What do you think, Amy? Amy, are you there? She must be muted. Okay. unfortunately, we seem to have lost her. But anyway, you can go to the StarChildProject.com and you can check out the rest of the stuff that we have going on there. Also, just a little bit of news for New Zealand and all of that jazz. I have uploaded our new video today. It's about 2 hours long or so. It's a presentation by PhD Dr. Paul Connett, and it's about fluoride. Essentially, those of you who are in the truth movement, you probably already know this, that fluoride has an awful lot of ongoing health effects, most of which are somewhat nasty. And and it's not the brightest idea to be keeping it in your water. And namely, it's extremely difficult, like with a lot of other concepts, it's extremely difficult to actually get it out of your water because the people who have, you know, decided to put it in there just won't be convinced otherwise. Unless, of course, they indeed do look at evidence. And that's exactly what this is. If you go to youtube.com/ Mr. News, MR News, Guerrilla Media, GUERILLA, Media, Mr. News, Guerrilla Media, you can then wind up having a look at this particular thingy, which should be quite informative, to say the least, because I really enjoyed filming it, and I can't believe I got the video edited and uploaded so freaking quickly, frankly. All right. This almost wraps up another show for today. I'd like to thank my marvelous and special guest, Amy Vickers, who's joined us from the Starchild Skull Project .com. And unfortunately, she can't kind of hear what I'm saying or anything like that. So it's a little bit effed, as we say in radio. We've certainly had a lot of technical difficulties today, and my apologies to the listeners and to our affiliates. But it was, I've got a great excuse. It was all my fault. You know, I'm the one who loves to be blamed for everything because for some reason, because I'm laughing and cheeky all the time, I seem to get away with it without reproach. You know, maybe it's because I'm so nice to everybody and try to give everybody a say and such like that. Or maybe I'm expecting and hoping for just too much. Maybe I'm trying to ask too much out of life. Yeah, I probably suspect that I am. Now, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave you now, ladies and gentlemen, to your own devices. And quite frankly, thank you very much for sticking in with the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Tell your friends about it. Flick around to the archives of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com and the fabulous Kiwi collaborators that we've had there, because they all need you to hear what they've got to say. Now, thank you very much again, and thank you again, and thank you again, and thank you again. Can't say thank you enough, you know? Really? Isn't that the most important lesson in life? Is that the one thing you can't say too much is thank you? Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. See you later.